medical community proudly presents the JDE Connection, a Quest On Air podcast production.
This podcast explores and showcases how JDE customers are harnessing specific functionality and capabilities to drive business success.
Hello, JDE Connection listeners. Welcome back. I'm Chandra Wabshaw, one of your podcast hosts, and I'm the Business Solutions Lead at Colas IS Support. With me this week and every week is my friend and podcast partner, Paul Hout Cooper, Vice President of JD Edwards Product Development at Oracle. Before I get back to the usual question, Paul, I first want to know, have you started running post-marathon?
Yeah, if you could call it that. Yeah, I took the week off as advised and did start running on Sunday. Tried to run 3 miles and, well, I tried. So we'll leave it at that. I'm slowly getting back into it. So ran a little Sunday, ran a little Tuesday. So we're going to keep ramping it back up slowly. Want to avoid injury coming off of this and do the smart thing. How about you? Are you back on the pavement?
I am hitting the pavement again, doing the same since that was a big jump in mileage for me. So, yes, I'm kind of starting off fairly easy, very similar. I'm going to run 4 days this week, you know, kind of taking a day in between, if you will. I felt pretty good, so I can't complain there. I am also trying to get back into strength work, which kind of fell off the tracks for the last 8 weeks.
I mean, trying to fit in those longer runs, weekdays, and then follow those up with 30 to 60 minute lifting sessions. I mean, there's only so much time in the morning.
Yes, exactly. So yeah, I'm starting with some more, I would say, body weight exercises so that I'm not uber sore. I'll incorporate the weights back in another week or two. I'm going to give myself time to throw in a couple days a week of body weight strength work, and then I'll throw in the weights.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, we're not young pups anymore. We don't bounce back the way we used to. We got to manage our bodies a little bit more, be a little more mindful, respectful, apply some wisdom.
Yes.
As well as some Bengay.
For those aches, those body aches that I didn't have 10 years ago. What the
exactly.
Heck?
Exactly. Gain a whole new appreciation for those folks that go out and whether they run marathons with short breaks in between or do those ultras and 300-mile ultras in 3 months or something like that. I mean, I just can't imagine how people recover that fast, but more power to them.
Exactly. All right. So this week, I think we should pick back up and circle back on form design aid.
Oh, the topic we were going to cover last week that we never covered.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah, that one.
Because we talked too much on lessons and marathons and leadership.
Yeah.
Well. It was good.
You know, we get going on a topic and, you know, hopefully people found it educational and beneficial and all that. But heck, we had fun talking about it.
Yeah, we had so much fun. We actually recorded that episode twice. The first time was a little too long, so we had to shorten it up. And it was hard to find the right spots to edit. So,
yeah.
Oh, well.
For sure.
That's okay.
Picking back up on FDA, I'm trying to remember where exactly we left off, but I think we were going through some of the events and how to follow. I think variables is about where we were, like following the data. So if you want to understand where something is getting written to, how do you basically trace through the code to locate where that update is happening, where that insert is happening, and what table it's actually happening to. I think, you know, the whole thing started with the question of where does this information get written to? What tables are getting updated? And while we started our exploration into FDA and how you can use it in certain instances to help answer those questions when your traditional or your typical whatever resources don't work, I don't think we ever actually answered the question. So maybe today we can kind of get to that. Does that sound good?
Sounds like a plan. I like it.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Right. So we're in FDA. we're looking at meter readings, which I believe was P1220. Does that sound right?
Sounds about right. Now I forgot. Thank you. That's what happens when you take.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Off,
P12120. I apologize. So we're in there and we're poking around now. And like I said, you can right click and get to the ER, edit ER. And from there, you can go print the ER and start searching through the ER that way. ER being event rules. Or you can start actually opening up events that are behind the application to understand what's happening, when, where, why, how, etc. So in this particular case, we know that the application is not updating the table directly through its business view or through any sort of table IO written directly in the ER, because that would have shown up in cross-reference. The other way that we know that that's not happening is if we right-click on, say, the grid within meter readings, the meter readings form, and we go to event rules, we can see a series of events that reflect an update or that control updates to the database, like add grid record to database before, add grid record to database after, update before, after. I think you get the point. When you go into these events, you immediately see a suppress add or suppress update being called, which effectively tells the application to not update through its business view. Okay, so you know at this point, okay, the application, wherever it's writing, it's not going to happen right now within the ER. It's got to be happening at a function or named ER that the application is calling. Does that make sense?
That does make sense. So if we see that suppress update, we know this event rule's not doing that. So it's happening elsewhere.
Yep.
We need to focus our efforts on the finding of that.
Yeah, the locating elsewhere of, you know, where that logic happens. It just so happens in this particular instance with the way this application was designed slash written, that within those same database events is what I would call them, right? It's a grid database event. They put all the logic, they being we, I guess, to do the meter readings calculations. And you can start to see, you know, odometer calculations happening. They have good comments in here about what they're trying to do. And we see, hey, update original reading.
Yep.
And we see call name DR to write the 12024 fuel meter. Well, I guess that answered one of our questions, huh?
I think it did.
You know, so what table are we, is it involved? Well, apparently the 1202 is involved because that's what the comment says. But, you know, we're going to ignore that.
Put that in there for me.
Yeah, that way you don't actually have to go into the named ER or business function to figure it out. But we're going to assume that we didn't see that. And we're going to try to find what function is responsible. And of course, we see something that, hey, you know, sometimes we label things fairly intuitively, unlike our error messages, you would say.
Yeah, I do say that.
You say that.
Sorry. I do say that a lot. Hey, I'm not the only one.
You're the only one I hear it from. Anyway, so we see it says write meter reading transaction. Well, that's probably the jackpot, I would assume. I mean, again, I don't know this application. I've never looked at it before. Maybe I cracked it open the last time we met and maybe one time before that. So this is all new to me. So I am just following the logic, right? The way I would if I was trying to answer your question, right? So I open up write meter reading transaction. I find the named ER source that, you know, what is the object number? In other words, N1300210. I'm going to make note of that, right? Because that's the actual function that likely contains the logic to go do this right. But I'm also going to look at this data structure thing. And for those unaware of what a data structure is, that's fine. I mean, think of it as a set of parameters that a function exposes, right? What can you either pass to the function? What values can you pass to it? Or what values can you receive? Or in some cases, what values go both ways? Some can be passed back and forth, Some are required. If we actually highlight in red or use a different font color to show those that are actually required, which unfortunately for those that are colorblind, probably not helpful. Note to self on accessibility guidelines. All right, moving on. Got a requirement. I'll write that down. But point being, you can see what's required, what's not required, what is getting passed back and forth. Now, we want to know where this stuff is getting written, but also what's getting written. So there is a meter amount. That's probably, I'm just going to go out on a limb, that's probably the value that we're interested in, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably.
That was the value that you were looking for, is okay, where do we record these meter amounts? Meter what amounts. Tables do they go to? So, okay, this named ER exposes meter amounts, and I see what is getting passed to it. So why I'm doing that is I want to make note of the parameters that I want to follow when I get to the function. What do I want to look for? So I'm going to make note that meter amount is the variable or parameter that I want to find in that source code, because I want to know where meter amount goes.
Mm-hmm.
That comment that I saw said F1202. That's fine. But I'm not going to trust that that's the only table that gets updated. It didn't mention anything about the 9/11, right?
True,
and yet,
it didn't.
When I open up this named ER and I look at this set of parameters within the data structure, I see two flags, one to update 9/11 and one to update the 1202.
You're right. Those are the ones that are highlighted in red.
And those are required fields. Like we have to actually tell the function whether or not we want to do the update. And that's fine. I get that. That makes sense to me. So I know I've got two tables now identified that are involved in this update. That's fine. I'm likely writing meter readings to that. But that may not answer my total question either. Like, but what column? Not only what tables are getting updated, but where is the data actually stored within that table? Right?
Right.
So
otherwise, I got to go data browse the table, look at all the columns to figure out. And guess, right?
And
this will be a much quicker way.
Well, it could be a quicker way, right? Well, when you get used to browsing your ER and browsing your functions. Okay. So, all right. I make note of meter amount. I know I've got these update flags. I know what I'm going to be looking for. So for now, I'm going to get out of FDA. I've done enough at this point. I want to follow this trail wherever it leads. So I'm going to go ahead and get out. And I'm going to go back to OMW. And I'm going to actually pull up the N1300210 named ER.
Ah.
That function that we saw getting called. Now, when I go into design mode, another little observation, I'm going to say start business function design. It's on the second tab on design tools. Named ERs can contain more than one function. In other words, more than one section. In this particular case, there's only one section, so it's pretty straightforward. If it had more than one, I would be looking for the one with the function name that I saw in the named ER. In this case, write meter reading transaction. Okay. I would want to select that, and I would want to go to form, and I'd want to go to edit in order to open up that named ER. And now I'm looking at a set of event rules, just like the event rules that you saw within your applications, but now it's in a named ER rather than an app. And what actually happens, just a side note, all named ERs get generated into one of two things, either C code or Java code. So not sure if people knew that, but a named ER can be generated into one or the other. If it is locally ran, so if it runs on the actual client where you're running your application, then it'll be generated into Java and executed as a Java function. If it is not local, then it generates actual C source. And so you have two options when looking at server-based named ERs, and that is you can either open them up in OMW like you and I are doing right now, or you can go to your C source, which is within Visual Studio, and you can pull up the C syntax, the C function itself, and view it that way. So if you're more comfortable, which some developers are, more comfortable reading C than they are reading named ER because it's just faster for them, you can go directly there. So that's just, again, another option. But I apologize for squirreling there and maybe going too deep. Let's just focus on this named ER. So we start going through the logic. And again, you don't need to be a programmer to understand this. It says it does a select on a 1202. Well, you do enough SQL, this translates directly to you, right? You could yep. open up the select statement and you can see, okay, we're going to look at the 1202 and we're searching based on account ID and we're searching based on asset number. So we're trying to find the 1202 for that asset number and that account ID. Pretty straightforward, right?
Yeah, very. This is cool. I've never actually seen this part. So thank you.
Well, and this is going to be the same in ER. So if you go into an application, you can see a lot of applications have table.io directly written in their ER statements. So you'll see it there too. So this isn't specific to a named ER. But you can open up those queries. You can see what index it's using. Again, as someone that is used to writing their own SQL to try to access tables, this starts to resonate a little bit, doesn't it?
Absolutely does.
So, and you can see all the different parameters in the table. And again, you've got this operation, so you can see whether or not you're assigning it, whether or not you're returning it, all of that, right? In this case, since we're doing a select, it's just going to be assigned. It's going to be, okay, what key values do you want to pass in? Do you want to search with?
So
simple enough.
Operation. Yep.
The equal operation. You see a select, then you see a fetch next. Okay. Again, we know what we're doing. We're searching for these records. And I say records plural because, well, I used a select and I'm following it by a fetch. So I must have more than one record that I'm worried about, right?
Yep.
Potentially. So I can open up that fetch and I can see, okay, I'm searching and returning the record that I found. And if I'm successful, I continue to fetch records because I see a subsequent select and fetch. And so it looks like, again, not knowing this, I'm going to guess that the 1202 has got some sort of periods. You know, I'm not an accountant, never wanted to be, thank you, but I see century, fiscal year, those sorts of things. I start to think buckets. There must be buckets. 1202 is, you know, it's got maybe for every period that you've got defined, I probably have financial buckets defined. Okay. Makes sense to me, even though I know nothing about this. And I'm starting to loop through each one of those periods. And correct. I guess would be, all right, well, I probably have to assign whatever that meter reading was to the appropriate bucket.
Correct.
Pretty basic, right? So again, now I'm also looking for that parameter that I talked about before. Where is that meter reading, that meter amount? Where is that going, right? So this is where searching through C might be faster because I can actually just input MN meter amount and find everywhere it occurs. But if I try that here.
Yeah, if you do the edit and find.
I don't see anything, right?
Right.
Now, why would that be? Well, maybe I'm searching on the wrong thing. So let's double check. We're allowed to make mistakes on the show, right?
Absolutely.
So let's just go.
It's called being human.
And I would expect somewhere in here to see, okay, here's an update to the FO911 edit line. So that means I must be calling another function, which I can tell you, as we talked about before, when we designed all of our major transactions, we gave them what we called master business functions, and they had a begin doc and edit line. Some have an edit doc, and all of them have an end doc. So whenever I see an edit line or any of those names, then I know for a fact I'm dealing with an MBF. So I must be calling the 911 MBF. I also see another function call down here called the 1202 update item balances. Okay, so even though this says write meter transactions, I'm still not at the level that the updates to the table happen. I've got to go to another level. So if I open up that F1202 update item balances and I look at the parameter mapping, the data structure mapping, I find that meter amount. is being passed in, and now it's MN total. So now what do I got to do? Well, I got to make a note of what this function is, B1200004. All right, I note that down. Why? Because I have to go look up that business function in my C source file so that I can go trace and look for MN total now to see where we map MN total to.
Got it. So you can't get to that from here.
Nope. That's another object. It's another function. So now I got to go open that other function in order to do this. So again, we're going down layers. If I was interested in the 9/11 function, which I am, arguably, I open that up too, and I can see that's the B0900049. Okay, so that's the MBF for the general ledger.
General ledger.
You know, that everybody knows. And again, I probably have that amount in here somewhere, and I'm going to note that that's going to MN units. So I got one going to MN total. And let's forget the MN for a second. There's just a naming convention since it's a math numeric, not important. So I've got one going to total, one going to units. I'm going to have to open both functions to go figure out where that gets mapped to. So we'll start, and given the time here, we'll start with the 1200004, and that should be sufficient for us to effectively demonstrate what you need to do. 1200004, right? So
yep.
To find the 1200004, I'm going to go into my 920 root folder, go into DV920, or, you know, since I'm on a full client, and then I'm going to go into the source folder, and that's where all my business functions are stored. So I'm going to open it up, and now I'm going to search for that variable, which was MN total, right?
Yep.
Okay. Now we're in C. Yeah, I'm not sure if you've ever seen C before, but here you go. This is the C syntax. The C language has a completely different syntax than what you were just looking at, but you can already start to see that if you ignore all the noise,
parentheses and pipes and
yeah, exactly.
All that.
All that. You can start to read words here. Okay, I'm doing a math zero test on a total. Whatever you think I'm doing. Checking to make sure that I got a value, right? I'm
not
checking
zero.
Right, exactly. I'm checking to see what transaction type I'm working with, right? Okay, yep. That might be a note for me to make, that there's only a specific transaction type. So again, I'm going to note certain conditions, because if updates aren't happening, I want to log what are the variables, what are the things that influence how this gets written, so I can start to understand behavior if I need to. But I'm not going to go too deep into that. Let me just follow total. All right. I see total is now added to APYC. Now, again, I'm not an asset management person, so I would have to go probably look up what that data dictionary item is. What is APYC?
I see. So if we just go over to the data dictionary, since I've got the web open right now, and I'll put in my alias APYC. That's amount beginning balance PY, prior
awesome.
Year.
Prior year. Now, if that's amount beginning balance prior year, then the next one that it's actually adding to is APYN.
Amount prior year net posting.
Net posting. So again, I'm going to write that down. All right. But I also now know that I am mapping to those columns in the 1202. Those are the columns that I need to be concerned with. There is another one, depending on the transaction type. Turns out transaction type one must be a retirement transaction. So we're going to add it to the BORG.
Amount original beginning budget.
Okay. If it's a salvage value type transaction two, I write it to the TKER.
Which is the units projected final.
And if it's a transfer, I write it to the BREQ.
Which is the budget requested.
And then there's a transfer out to the BAPR.
Budget approved for BAPR.
Then we said we had to align this with periods. So now I see a statement down here that's looking at period number, and based on the period number, I add total to the amount, to the AN whatever the
14, 13, 12.
Yeah, whatever column
is applicable
aligns with the period that I'm in.
Yeah. Okay. Posting amount for each.
For each period. And, you know, for fun, I'll keep searching down, see if there's anything else that jumps out at me. But I think I have my answer. And it doesn't look like there's any other assignments. So I know I'm dealing with the 1202. I know that that amount goes into several different columns depending on what transaction type I'm dealing with. But more importantly, and most applicable probably to your case, is the period number and the amount that is associated with that. That's what you're interested in. And all right, great. I got my table. I got my columns that I need to be aware of. If I'm going to go retrieve this information or I'm going to accumulate this information for a period of time, whatever, I start to know where to go, right?
Yep.
And then I would do the same thing for the 0900049, which again, back to our, what I mentioned before, that's the MBF for the 9/11. And we were looking at not total, we were looking at
units, wasn't it?
Units. It was units. You're right. So then I first try to find edit line. All right, I found edit line. Now within edit line, I want to find units. Here's my MN units. Excellent. Let me follow everywhere where this goes, right? So this is getting copied to a GLU. Well, that's probably GL units is my guess.
Probably.
I see units again. All right, and testing if it's zero. Again, I walk through this. I start to look through this. I'm just, where is this getting mapped? Where do I need to be worried about it? Pretty straightforward, I think.
Yeah, if you look at code all day.
If you look at code all day. But anyway, so you know that it goes the GLU, which is likely the column in the 9/11 that you need to be concerned with, potentially. Yay, you gave a strain GLU.
There is no alias for GLU.
Okay, so we have to search further then. So what you can do is, again, tracing where this goes. We've mapped the input units to this GLU parameter, and then you can follow the GLU parameter and try to figure out what does that actually get mapped to, right? And it looks like the GLU parameter actually, I'm just trying to follow it. There's GLU. There is a GLU in the 9/11.
Not in my data dictionary.
Well, probably because it's just you. If you're looking for GLU, GL would be the prefix. It's just you. Yeah. Like you
units.
See GL.
There you go.
So it's just units. So again, you got to remember, we're even using the prefix sometimes in our labeling. Yep. So you're just looking at the last four characters.
Which I was doing right before.
Yes. There you go. It goes to the 9/11, goes to the units column.
Units.
We know that it goes to the 1202 and it goes to the appropriate period column. There are some exceptional cases where it gets written to other columns based on whether or not you're retiring or, you know, exactly what you're doing with the asset at that point in time. Totally makes sense. Now you know what tables are involved. You know what columns are involved. You know how to go from an application to navigate through the events to figure out which events are responsible for calling which functions to actually perform your database operations and how to then trace the values through those functions to ultimately get to the tables that you're interested in. That makes sense?
It does. It's very helpful. Thank you for going through all this with us.
Of course. I find it fun. This is how I discover. This is how I learn. This is also how I used to troubleshoot. I used to say, and my team may not like it, but I used to say, if you're actually debugging, if you're putting breakpoints in a function, that's like your last resort. You should be starting at the function level and locating the logic and searching through and reading the logic and analyzing the logic to try to figure out what's going on, to try to understand under what conditions you would get would produce the behavior that you're looking for versus trying to test the software and debug through the software all the way down. So I work things backwards. I work it bottom up. So my natural reaction, anytime you've asked what table is getting updated, my natural reaction is to jump straight into the code and figure out what business functions are responsible and work at that angle. because I'm just more comfortable working that way. So again, I just want to give you options.
Yeah. No, it's good to have options. This is what, quote unquote, where you grew up, if you will, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is what you came up through, not what I came up through. You know, I came from the business side. So for me, even getting into different aspects of going into data dictionary and even getting to the event rules, which I've done in the past, not to this level of detail. So for me, this is where I want to challenge myself to use this more often.
Well, and I want to, what's the right word? I mean, I don't want you to be intimidated. Well, empower, but I also want to, some may be intimidated by like, oh, no, that's too technical. I can't do it. Yes, you can. All right. The whole point behind the way this tool set was built was to facilitate folks that understood the business doing point and click programming, not necessarily built for, I'd say, you know, computer science engineers. We wanted those that understood the business to be able to build applications to run the business. And so you should, as a BA, be able to crack open FDA, RDA, look at the event rules, go into named event rules, be able to understand them. Where it does become challenging is likely the C functions, because there's all that syntax and all those arrows and, you know, ampersands and all of these parentheses all over the place. And it looks like a completely foreign language. But if you ignore all that, you can see the same thing that you see, because we use the same naming conventions for things. And it becomes easier to at least trace where values go and some of the conditions, even if you can't understand the technical side of exactly what is that operation doing.
Right.
So
exactly.
I want to demystify it, and I want to empower you to go explore that. Again, you're not trying to code. You're not trying to even debug. You're just trying to read and understand. And you should be able to do that.
Well, thank you. Right. I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. It's very helpful. Like you said, we're not trying to make developers out of everybody, right? It's just another tool in our tool bag that we have to be able to solve problems or to learn or to be able to maybe be that first line of troubleshooting, where then I can take it to my developer to say, okay, I know where the problem is. Can you look into this specific thing?
Yep, absolutely. So. All right. Well, we can't end an episode without a Midwesternism. So what do we got this time?
So this time we're going to start transitioning, since Thanksgiving is quickly approaching. We are going to transition into Midwestern holiday foods.
Oh,
so those things you might find at the family get-togethers that might be on the table, aside from some of the previous ones that we talked about, like Jell-O salad, because whether that's the summertime or a holiday, it's bound to be on a Midwestern table somewhere.
Sure. I'm gaining weight as you speak.
Absolutely. All right. So we're going to kick it off with green bean casserole.
No, my favorite. It is. It's absolutely my favorite.
Good. I'm glad somebody likes it, because it ain't me.
Well, and it's got to be made the non-from scratch way. I'm sorry, but I grew up on green bean casserole. Those green beans better be canned. You got obviously the cream of mushroom soup, you know,
from a can.
You're not doing any of this stuff from scratch. You do it from scratch, it has a whole different flavor. I'm not saying it's bad. It's just I didn't grow up on that. So what I'm expecting, my taste
yeah,
buds with my
that
taste buds
fork oh, yeah. in your mouth.
Yeah, I want
a certain taste.
Yeah, and I want that nostalgia. I want to be taken back in time. And I've gone to parties before. They go, "Well, we got green bean casserole." I'm like, "Awesome, this is great." And I take a bite and I'm like, "Nope, didn't work." Wah, wah. And I just politely finish everything else on my plate and dump that in the trash. But anyway.
Wow. Note to self, if you ever make green bean casserole, make sure that it's authentic Midwestern. See, I'm that type of person that likes to add a little flair to it. And I'd prefer fresh green beans over canned. I am not a canned green bean girl. Ooh. and cream of mushroom soup. This is probably, for me, this is one I didn't ever care for because as a child, I was not a fan of cream of mushroom soup or cream of anything. I actually hated mushrooms as a kid. Oh, I could not stand them. Now I love them. I put them in everything. So who knows? Maybe I'd actually like a green bean casserole. Who knows? I'm not sure. But, right. You know, you forgot to mention the topping, which is like the crunchy fried onion bits. Yes. I don't know what you want to call those. They come out of a can, though, I think.
Absolutely, they do. Yep.
Okay, well, we'll roll with green bean casserole. And
I hope some of you are motivated to go check it out. Go look up a recipe. Go ahead and make it for Thanksgiving. It is a staple. It is a Thanksgiving staple. So if any of you do, by all means, email us. Let us know your thoughts.
What your family thought.
Bring it to the, you know, the potluck, the office potluck.
Just
see what happens. Yeah.
Ooh, I like that idea.
And just remember, if it doesn't go over well, that's just more for you and it's their loss.
Or just box it up and send it to Paul.
Yeah, there
apparently.
You go.
Apparently, he will enjoy every last bite.
Absolutely. 100%. Okay.
All right. Well, for questions, feedback, or ideas for future episodes, contact us at the JDE Connection at questoraclecommunity.org. Until next time, let's keep learning, sharing, and most importantly, laughing together. Toodles.
See ya. Thank you for tuning in for today's episode of the JDE Connection, a Quest On Air podcast production. Show notes and links can be found at questoraclecommunity.org/JDE Connection.
To learn more about what's happening in the Quest JD Edwards community, visit our website at questoraclecommunity.org/JD Edwards.